Nirgunaha.
Nirgunaha.
Without material qualities.
Without material qualities.
Api.
Api.
Although.
Although.
He.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Ajaha.
Ajaha. Unborn.
Unborn.
Avyaktaha.
Avyaktaha.
Unmanifest.
Unmanifest.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Lord.
Prakritehe.
Prakritehe.
To material nature.
To material nature.
Paraha.
Paraha.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
Swamaya.
Swamaya.
Of his own energy.
Of his own energy.
Gunam.
Gunam.
Material qualities.
Material qualities.
Avisha.
Avisha.
Entering.
Entering.
Vajja.
Vajja.
Obligation.
Obligation.
Badakatam.
Badakatam.
The condition of being obliged.
The condition of being obliged.
Gataha.
Gataha.
Accepts.
Accepts.
Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is always transcendental to material qualities, and therefore he is called Nirguna, or without qualities. Because he is unborn, he does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. Although the Lord is always above material existence, through his spiritual potency he appeared and acted like an ordinary human being, accepting duties and obligations apparently like a conditioned soul. So to repeat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu.
Is always transcendental to material qualities.
Is always transcendental to material qualities.
And therefore he is called Nirguna.
And therefore he is called Nirguna.
Or without qualities.
Or without qualities.
Because he is unborn.
Because he is unborn.
He does not have a material body.
He does not have a material body.
To be subjected.
To be subjected
to attachment and hatred.
To attachment and hatred.
Although the Lord is always above,
although the Lord is always above
material existence,
through
his spiritual potency,
through his spiritual potency,
he appeared and acted,
he appeared and acted
like an ordinary human being,
like an ordinary human being,
accepting duties and obligations,
accepting duties and obligations,
apparently like a conditioned soul.
Apparently like a conditioned soul.
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So-called attachment, detachment, and obligations pertain to the material nature, which is an emanation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But whenever the Lord descends and acts in this material world, He does so in His spiritual position. Although his activities materially appear different, spiritually they are absolute and non-different. Thus, it is an imposition upon the Supreme Lord to say that he is envious of anyone or friendly to anyone. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, text 11, the Lord clearly says, Avashananti mam mudha manushyam tanam ashutam. Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Krishna appears on this earth or within this universe without any change in his spiritual body or spiritual qualities. Indeed, he is never influenced by the material qualities. He is always free from such qualities, but he appears to act under material influence. This understanding is aropata, or an imposition. Therefore, Krishna says, janma, karma, chami divyam. Whatever he does, being always transcendental, has nothing to do with material qualities. Evam yo veti tatvataha. Only devotees can understand the truth of how he acts. The fact is that Krishna is never partial to anyone. He is always equal to everyone, but because of imperfect vision, influenced by material qualities, one imposes material qualities upon Krishna. And when one does so, he becomes a mudha, a fool. When one can properly understand the truth, one becomes devoted and nirguna, free from material qualities. Simply by understanding the activities of Krishna, one can become transcendental, and as soon as one is transcendental, he is fit to be transferred to the transcendental world. Chaktua, deha puna janma naiti mam eti sojana. One who understands the activities of the Lord in truth is transferred to the spiritual world after he gives up his material body. So, Nirguno pi yajo vyato bhagavan prakrite padaha swamaya gunam avishya mojya bhata kathang kataha. So, Om Ganat Timuranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurveda Maha. So to understand this principle of aropita, or imposition, one has to understand what the inductive process is. We have two types of processes for this particular discussion, inductive and deduction. The inductive process is basically examining a whole bunch of things and coming to some conclusion about nature in general, some specific conclusion. I mean, the example Prabhupada gives is that if one sees that this person died, that person died, this person died, therefore one comes to the conclusion that man is mortal, or everyone dies. So the problem, of course, we do know everyone dies, but the problem with this particular process is that we have not examined every single instance in this material world, because that's impossible, because we are limited spirit souls. And so most science is based upon this inductive process. For example, when they're looking at the stars in the sky and doing with their radio telescopes or the Hubble telescope, which is now, how many years old, 20 years old or something like that, celebrating its birthday. Next is the Hubble Jr. coming, Hubble the second. They're actually thinking that the laws of nature that apply in this particular planet apply everywhere in the universe. So that's how they're coming to their conclusions about what a particular star is composed of. They may be right, they may be wrong. I'm not drawing any of my own conclusions because I'm not an expert in what the different stars are composed of or the different planets are composed of. But they're coming to those conclusions based upon the inductive process. You know, coming up with a theory based upon, you know, their examination of everything they've seen on this Earth planet or everything they've seen within their experience. So that's induction. And so we're followers of the descending process, in which we use deduction because we come up with, we have Krishna's opinion, which is absolute because Krishna is omniscient and of course he created everything, he designed everything. And so then we can come up with specific conclusions or general conclusions based upon the absolute knowledge, the descending process. That's our process. So anyway, this aropita, that is thinking that Krishna is like us, in other words. In other words, like we've seen different personalities, and basically everybody I've seen in this world has been imperfect. Everybody I've seen in this world has a material body. I mean, I haven't seen... Of course, you say that pure devotee has a spiritual body, but at least it's physical. So everybody I've seen, they get old, or they die before they get old, or they eat, and they have to do all sorts of things with their food afterwards, which we can't describe in class. And it's just 100% of the time I've observed that. So therefore, if I'm not accepting Shastra, the descending process, or Krishna's opinion, I'm going to think Krishna's the same. You know, Krishna has a material body, and therefore I become a Maya body. And it's interesting, this whole study of Mayavada and personalist, Advaita philosophy, how people come to their specific conclusions. And I'd like to talk a little bit about this in this regard, because the Mayavada philosophy and impersonalism and Advaita philosophy are actually different types. It's not all one. In other words, the philosophy of thinking that Krishna has a material body or there's different versions of that philosophy. And this is analyzed by Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakur, specifically in the Jiva Dharma, which I'm making a study of right now. And there's two words that are important to understand in this regard. One is called Vivarta, and the other one is Parinama. So I'll explain what those words mean. Any of you have notes? You can take notes during class now. Because we're going to be asking you later about this. This will be your Bhakti Shastri test. So Vivarta basically means illusion. You know, the one is an illusion. I mean, we're definitely subject to Vivarta illusion right now, isn't it? And the word parinama means transformation. So these are two important concepts. So first we're going to talk about the Mayavada philosophy. We're going to actually talk about the Mayavada philosophy today and the Advaita philosophy, which are actually different, although we tend to think they're the same philosophy. So the Shankaracharya taught the Mayavada philosophy. So remember these two words, parinama and vivarta, okay? Remember them. So we're going to talk about Mayavada philosophy, Advaita philosophy, in terms of these two words. So so let's talk about Brahman. There's another word we should understand. Brahman means, basically, in this particular context, the greatest, or the absolute. You know, it means spirit, it means so many different things according to the context. So we understand Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagwaneti, Shabdite, that Brahman has three different aspects. That is, the Brahmeti, the impersonal aspect, the localized aspect, who we call Paramatma, and then the personal aspect, who we call Bhagavan, right? I think you're all devotees, you know these things. But basically, for the intent of this, this discussion, Brahman means the greatest, you know, the topmost, okay? So, basically, the impersonalists, Mayavadis, the Advaitis, have two types of, let's say, impersonal philosophy. One is based on Parinamvad, and the other one is Vivartavad. So, Shankaracharya was against what's called Brahma Parinamavad. In other words, he said that the Brahman can't be transformed. You know, Brahman is the greatest, can't be transformed. And he accepted something called Vivartavad, which means the Brahman, the supreme, the highest, becomes an illusion. It's actually pretty stupid, too. Of course, Shankaracharya had his mission. His mission was, basically, to teach covered Buddhism so he could bring people back to the Vedic literatures. Buddha has his mission to take people away from the Vedic literatures because people, Brahmanas, were misusing the Vedic literatures to excuse all sorts of things, including meat-eating and exploiting of people in the name of Brahmanism. So not only Buddha rebelled against the so-called Brahminical culture, but you had the Jains and the Aranyakas who revolted against them. What I mean, Aranyaka means the people who go to the forest. So they revolted against this Brahminical exploitation of people and Brahminical misuse, so-called Brahminical misuse, of the Vedic literatures to justify things like meat-eating and other things like that. So anyway, so Shankaracharya had his mission, and he rejected Brahma Parinamvad. He said Brahman cannot be transformed because he's the greatest. But he said, I believe in Vivartavad. Vivarta means I believe that Brahman can actually be a Maya, which is actually interesting too. And I'll explain the fault on that. And this Brahman gets in so much Maya that the Brahman thinks he's a Jiva. In other words, I'm the supreme Brahman. And because I'm in Maya, I think I'm a Jiva. You know, that's pretty good, isn't it? Of course, you find many different versions of this nowadays that people say, you know, when you become spiritually realized, you realize you're God. You realize you're the supreme Brahman. So there are three types of this Mayavada philosophy taught by Shankaracharya. One type is the soul is Brahman, but he thinks he's an individual soul. In other words, we're Brahman, but I'm an illusion about that. Another one is the jivas are reflections of the Brahman. And the third is the jivas and Maya are a dream of Brahman. In other words, I'm God, but I'm just dreaming. I'm actually a jiva. Practically all, I remember thinking like that before I joined the movement anyway, that you're all figments of my imagination. I'm God. Anyone ever think like that? I was in Maya. So I was thinking like that. I said, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and I'm not there to hear or see the tree actually hasn't fallen. You know, if I'm not observing something, it doesn't actually happen. That's what I thought. You know, I'm God, you know, and you're all just figments of my imagination, you know. A purpose is just a figment of my imagination. You don't actually exist, a purpose. Because if I close my eyes, you disappear. You know, just wake up and you never existed. So I'm just in a little, anyway, so that, I actually accepted that. Unfortunately, I was in a complete illusion. Shankaracharya taught what he considered to be the Mahavakyas. Mahavakya, vakya means like the speech or talks, that the great sayings of the Vedic literatures that sort of justified this particular perspective. And of course, nowhere in the Vedic literatures does it mention that these are the Mahavakyas. It's just Shankaracharya came up with these to confuse people. These are four different Mahavakyas I'm going to read. One is famous, Sarvakal Vidam Brahma. That's from the Chandogya Upanishad. I mean, he's quoting from the Upanishad when he talks about Mahavakyas, which means everything is Brahman. And of course, we're not disagreeing with these particular statements of the Upanishads because we follow the Vedic literatures. We say that, of course, everything is Brahman because we accept Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy of achincha, veda, abheda, tattva. Everything is one and different from Krishna or Brahman simultaneously, inconceivably. Because it's Brahman, because it's an emanation from Brahman. It's the Shakti of Brahman. For example, I mean, Prabhupada one time said, you know, when you're sitting on a seat, you can think you're sitting on Krishna. Now, obviously, you know, the seat's not playing a flute. Maybe. Or maybe a seat can become a flute if you actually carve it in the right way. Take it, but it's not. You know, obviously, I'm not going to just get down, mister on the floor, pay obeisances to the seat, because the floor is also Krishna, according to that same philosophy. So, Prabhupada meant that we see it belongs to Krishna. Therefore, it actually is Krishna and not Krishna simultaneously. Just like if I see Prabhupada's, just like we see the imprint of Prabhupada's feet there on the Vyasa sign. So, you know, that reminds us of Krishna, connects with Prabhupada, and connects us with Prabhupada. But it's not exactly the same as Prabhupada. You know, there's one difference, Prabhupada's energy, you know, the imprint of Prabhupada's feet. And so in one sense you can say, oh, there's Prabhupada, Prabhupada's feet, or Prabhupada's shoes. Prabhupada used the example of shoes. When we see the shoes of someone, then it reminds us of that particular individual. So anyway, so that's the first Mahavakya. And you find the Mahavadis say this, Sarvakal Vidam Brahma, everything is Brahman. Another statement is Pragyanam Brahma, that attaining knowledge is Brahman. In other words, you can understand Brahman just by speculating and obtaining knowledge. I wish it was true like that. But, you know, Krishna says, Bhakti Mama Vijanati. Only by bhakti or devotion can I be known. And that's also from the Aitareya Upanishad, that particular statement. The third one is very interesting. Tatvam Ashi Sveta Keto. So Sveta Keto is the name of a particular person. That's from the Chandogya Upanishad. It means, you are that. And we also accept that. We are, of course, part and parcel of Krishna. Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. We are also spiritual quality. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Shetra Gyakya Tata Para. We are also, as Shetragya, that is the knower of the field, we are also transcendental. So we are also Brahman, but we are not the supreme Brahman. Brahman in this particular context meaning spirit, not the greatest. Although, you know, sometimes you see a boxer who says, I am the greatest. Remember that? Cassius Clay, he said, I am the greatest, but right now he's has Alzheimer's disease or whatever, he's had his head punched so many times. The greatest has some senior moments. So, anyway, so that, and then the fourth Mahavakya, so-called Mahavakya, is Aham Brahmasmi. Also, that's from the Brihadaranyaka Yaka Upanishad, which means, you know, I am Brahma, Aham Brahmasmi. And we also agree with that. Although the Mayavadis, because they think the Brahman is undifferentiated and no personality, etc., they misunderstand that. So the fault of this philosophy is that Vivarta, remember we're talking about Vivartavad, is that they're positing that Maya or illusion is stronger than Brahman. In other words, Brahman is not Brahman. In both the Mayavad philosophy and the Dvaita philosophy, you actually posit or you think that there's something stronger than Brahman. So in the Mayavad philosophy, illusion becomes stronger, Maya becomes stronger, so then Maya becomes the greatest, rather than Brahman be the greatest. Does everyone understand that point? So that's the fault. It's easy to defeat the Shankarites. Of course, you have to know some verses too. But it's easy to defeat them because their philosophy is inconsistent. They say Brahman is the greatest. Well, you know, where did Maya come from, huh? If Brahman is undifferentiated, you know, so there must be something that causes Brahman to be an illusion. Of course, ourselves being the small Brahmans, there is something that puts us in illusion. That's called Maya, which is Krishna's energy. Okay? So that's the first type of impersonalism. The second type is called the Advaitavad, which is non-dualism. And it's different than Mayavad philosophy. Advaitavad is what we call Brahma Parinamvad. I wish I had a blackboard to write these things down. That would be better. Or the PowerPoint or something. Yeah, anyway. But then if you take notes, you'll understand these things. It's not very difficult. This Kali Yuga. So Brahma Parinamvad means that Brahman becomes transformed. So just to reiterate, the first one was Brahma Vivartavad, where Brahman falls in illusion. And the second type of impersonalism is where Brahman becomes transformed. You understand Parinam? In the beginning we talked about how Parinam means transformation, Vivarta means illusion. So it's quite interesting. At least for me it's interesting. So in other words, Brahman becomes progressively transformed into the individual jivas. And the example sometimes given, and this is also similar to the example given in the Brahma Samhita, that you have milk and it becomes yogurt. This is another Sanskrit word which I should have written down so you could all read it. Vikara means transformation. And it also means deformation, because when you transform something, you deform it. And I'll give you an example. Like, have you ever seen that movie, The Transformers? No. You haven't seen that movie? 50% of your life. So, it's like you have these different creatures that transform themselves from cars to fighting machines and everything like that. So that's actually deformation. In other words, they become deformed. So in other words, Brahman becomes deformed. And they base their philosophy also on the Chandogya Upanishad. And it's interesting because you see people pick their favorite verses out of context in the Vedic literatures, and they can prove practically anything they want, you can prove. You know, you can even go to the parts of the Ramayana and where Lord Brahma is worshipping Lord Shiva, isn't it? And, you know, he's just showing us the etiquette of respecting the great devotee. And then you can say, well, Lord Shiva's God. I mean, you take things out of context and you misunderstand the purpose of the Vedic literatures. And, of course, Krishna says in 15:15 of the Gita that by all the Vedas he is to be known. You know, very clear statement. But people can read the Vedas because the Vedas are actually, the Shrutis, are variegated. One could read them again and again and again and not come to the conclusion without approaching the Mahajanas, as it says, Mahajana Yena Akasapanta, without following the path chalked out by the Mahatmas, and then one will never understand anything. So there's a verse in the Chandogya Upanishad, which says, before the cosmic manifestation, it was only the absolute. In other words, there was nothing except through Brahman, and then Brahman became transformed into the cosmic manifestation. Of course, this is very similar to what the Bhagavatam says, that before this material world, Krishna says, there was I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. During the creation, there's I. And after the creation, I continue to exist. So yes, Brahman exists before the material creation and exists after the material creation. So where does the material creation come from? And actually, we'll answer that question in a second. But the fault of this particular philosophy, Advaita philosophy, is that they don't explain what causes the transformation of Brahman. Because in order to become transformed, there has to be some external influence or cause of the transformation. Just like if I have this chair and I want to transform it into something else, I have to take some tools and transform it. It's not going to do it by itself. You know, Brahman is undifferentiated. It doesn't have any mentality, psychology, or desire. So how is it going to transform itself? This has to be something else. So that's the fault. So we also believe in a type of Parinambhav, which is interesting. Parinam means transformation. We believe in Shakti Parinambhav. There's another term. I know I should have written these things out. That's all right. You remember these things. You're an intellectual. So Shakti Parinambhav means the transformation of Krishna's energies. So in other words, as described in the Ishopanishad, Om Purna Ada Purna Midam. Everybody knows that verse? That the Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and he's perfect and complete, and so many perfect and complete emanations come from him, and he remains the perfect whole and complete. So in other words, Krishna has these Shaktis, Parashya Shaktir, Vividaya Shurite, Svabhavaki Gyana Palakriyacha, and these Shaktis transform. In other words, you have the Adi Shakti, and that expands as the spiritual Shaktis expand as the material Shaktis, and of course the Jiva souls, they're expanding from Krishna. They're part and parcel of Krishna. So this is it's called Shakti Parinam. And the absolute, our philosophy is the absolute is one, and its inconceivable potency manifests in four different ways. In four different ways is, one, his original form, his svarup. Two, which is called, I'm not going to give you the Sanskrit because you won't remember. His associates, his expansions, his abode. Three, the jiva souls. And four, the material energy. So this is the Shakti Parinambhav, which is our philosophy. So anyway, so we talked a little bit about impersonalism, voidism, Advaita philosophy, and Mayavada philosophy, and distinguish between both of them. So how does it apply to us being devotees of the Supreme Personality of God? Hopefully we're not Mayavadis, impersonalists, or Advaitavadis. Well, we do find, this is the application, we do find that we are subject very much to impersonal philosophy in our Krishna conscious movement. And that is under the heading of Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means we begin to think if we follow the rules and regulations, you know, ritualistically, without, you know, giving our heart or understanding the purpose of the rules or regulations, then we can become Krishna conscious. It doesn't work like that. Actually, according to Srila Rupa Goswami, devotional service has to be executed in the famous nutshell verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that devotional service, anyabhilashita shunyam jnanakarmana avritam, anukulena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutamam, has to be done actively, has to be done in accordance with what Krishna wants, but here's the kicker, really, main point, it has to be done with a spirit of devotion. In other words, personalism. And I'll give you an example. One thing that came up recently, we had a discussion about, I was just in Philadelphia, I had a discussion with one of my godbrothers about how impersonalism has made its way into the Krishna conscious movement in terms of ritualism. But like recently, and hopefully I don't get criticized for this, but recently there was a ceremony, there was a specific yatra we had. I know what it is. Let me see if you can guess. They were celebrated in ISKCON. It's called Chandan Yatra. Everyone's heard of Chandan Yatra? Mm-hmm. And so then I asked this devotee, I said, you know, so what's the purpose of Chandan Yatra? You know, because everything has to have a purpose. It's not just a ritual. You know, we do all these rituals, like we slap marks on our body every morning. What's that called? Tilak, you know. Yeah, and we don't, you know, what's the purpose of it? You know, of course, it's to mark our bodies as a temple of God. But we're supposed to remember what we're doing while we're doing it. Otherwise, it becomes Nimagra. So then, what's the purpose of Chandan Yatra? That's my question for all of you. What? It's so hot. So let's say you're in a temple where it's like 20 below zero. What do you do? You don't observe Chandan Yatra, and you turn up the heat. That's another thing. You know, you turn up the heat so it's 110 degrees, like it is in Vrindavan right now. In the temple. I mean, that's an option. Yeah, sure. Yeah, if you want to observe Chandan. You don't put Chandan on the deities when it's freezing out. I mean, just like sometimes I see people with during the Guru Puja, they put Chandan on Prabhupada when it's really cold. But Prabhupada wouldn't put it on when it was freezing out. I mean, but it becomes like a ritual. You know, here's the Chandan. But you're not thinking, why are you putting Chandan? Prabhupada said Chandan's to cool your head. You put it on, you know, the forehead of Srila Prabhupada. So everything we do has a purpose. And if you're executing your devotional service, you know, mindlessly, and thinking that you're going to go back to Godhead without remembering the purpose or doing it devotionally for Krishna. You know, of course, you know, it's better than nothing, obviously. Of course, it can cause you to deviate from Krishna consciousness, according to Srila Rupa Goswami. But it's a type of impersonalism. It's almost like karma mimamsa. It's not like, it is not karma mimamsa, but like karma mimamsa is that, you know, if you do your duties properly and you follow the rules and regulations, not in Krishna consciousness, but the karmic process, then even if they're demigods, whether or not they're demigods, then you have to get the result. And if there are demigods, you're going to get a result. And if they're not, it doesn't matter. They have to follow the karma. But Krishna consciousness is not like that. Not if you just like do all your things externally, are you going to become Krishna conscious. But the point I'm making is that's a type of impersonalism. To think that Krishna is under the control of the material energy, he's part of the material energy. So anyway, so therefore my advice to all of you is to remember what you're doing while you're doing it and do it with a spirit of devotion. So you don't succumb to that principle of Niyamagraha. And if something doesn't fit in according to the climate where you are, do it on a different day. Or turn up the heat in the temple. So, all right. On that happy note, because we have to end class, sorry to leave time for questions. Mm-hmm. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda.